conversations. Do carry on eating if you're still eating. Sorry to interrupt the conversation. But we're now going to just have a bit of input from the front on this whole issue of I could never believe because of other religions. So John Percival, the associate pastor, is going to speak just in a few moments to that topic. But before that, we thought it'd be helpful for you, interesting for you to hear someone's story who is from a different religious background of how they came to faith in Christ. So Michelle Polanyi has kindly agreed to come up and to answer a few questions. Thank you, Michelle. So just for 5 minutes or so, we're just going to find out a bit about Michelle. And so if you could just begin by telling us something of the background that you've come from in terms of religious background.
Okay, I come from a suburb outside Johannesburg called Indonesia, and it's predominantly Tamil or Hindu community, Tamil and Islam community. And Tamil is a faith practiced by mainly South Indians. They believe in Lord Shiva. I think one of the gods that they worship is up there. Basically, they believe that Lord Shiva is the creator of the world. Also that in order to, what our worship looked like was that we would observe fasts, wear traditional dress, and also abstain from eating certain foods. So we would do this going by the temple and...
Okay, great. So, growing up in that sort of Islamic stroke Tamil background, how did you come to now be a Christian? Just, I know it's a long story, but if you can just give us some idea of how you actually came to faith in Christ.
Well, 4 years ago, I moved to London, and my intention was just to stay for about 3 months. But I met some great people at Cafe Faber. I walked into the internet cafe on the first day that I arrived in London, and just mainly to use the internet cafe to start looking for jobs. But I ended up spending most of my time there, and that was because the people were good, and it was good company, it was friendly atmosphere, and just became friends with them. It was just amazing to see how kind and compassionate they were to the people around them. But obviously at that point I had not known that the cafe was a community centre. I should have read the big board outside that said Christian Community Centre. Uh-huh. But I didn't, so...
So it was a Christian internet cafe here on the island. Yeah, okay.
That's really well done. But I guess it was good that I didn't see the sign, because I would have walked in with my own prejudice and biasness of what Christians were like. Mm. And actually it came well into play a couple of months later when I started experiencing a few personal problems of my own, and just unresolved issues started to surface, and I turned to those friends, their Christian friends, for support. And I did have other friends around, but I think to me they were really kind and compassionate, and I had seen that before with other people, so that was quite good to see.
Okay, so you were struck by the love, the care of this Christian community that you were coming into on the island.
That's right.
How did you come to actually find out about the Christian faith, and what was the process of coming to find out what it is that Christians believe?
Well, these friends invited me. Obviously, in my time of need, I was just a lot more open to prayer. And they invited me to church and Bible studies. And even though I attended the Bible studies, I didn't really contribute anything throughout most of that year. So I just sat there, listened. And every opportunity, one-to-one with my friends, I basically asked all the questions that I could. And there were many conflicting things in my within my own tradition and the Christian teachings that I had asked, you know, so that basically I put them in a lot of difficult positions and tested our friendships, and they've never once been intrusive or disrespectful to what I believed. They never once asked me to believe in Jesus, you know, because they respected that I was a Tamil.
Yeah. So what was it that you actually came to understand then over that time of going through these Bible studies, and what was it that you came to believe?
I guess it's during that same time that I was praying to Jesus to help me through my circumstances that I met this pastor who was visiting City of Peace, and basically he just made a comment about how difficult it is to learn the Tamil language, and you know, I agreed with him, and then he asked me if I was visiting the church, and I was like, no, this is my regular church. And he's like, oh, when did you become a Christian? No, I'm a Tamil, I said. So he was quite confused, needless to say. But I was quite offended in a way, not just by what he did, but or he didn't do anything wrong, but I was just quite taken aback as to why don't I belong in this community. Is it wrong as a Tamil to worship Jesus? But I wasn't actually worshiping Jesus. I was just praying to him to get me through a circumstance. And I guess that was a turning point. As well as in the Bible, I read that the only way through to God was through Christ. And I think after my encounter with this pastor, I realized that it was time to make a decision and stop sitting on the fence.
So whereas before Jesus had been one of a whole range of gods that the Tamils would revere,
yeah,
you came to see that he was the only one.
Okay. That's right. Yeah.
And just briefly then, since that time, 3 or 4 years ago, starting to follow Christ, in terms of what difference it's made to your life, how has it affected your relationship with God, would you say?
Well, often I do things out of wanting to please God, and God has a great way of reminding me that he loves me for me, you know, not all the special and great skills that I have or that he's given me, but he's created me and that he loves me. So I think on a day-to-day basis, I realize that I have the freedom to act out of love towards people and towards my community and towards my family as well, and not out of obligation to earn my way to God. And that's very important to me.
And in terms of family, what was their reaction on you becoming a Christian?
Yeah, my family wasn't very thrilled, and they didn't think that this was such a great idea. But they really encouraged and supported me during this time. They based it on, I'm an adult, I made my own decisions. But they also warned me that if I make this commitment, that I need to stick to it and grow in it. So I really appreciated that this unconditional love wasn't just within a Christian community, but that it was within my family as well. Mm.
Michelle, thank you very much for sharing your story with us. Thank you.
If you can just give me one moment here to connect myself up to this radio mic.
One thing that Michelle forgot to say was that I think she has an exam tomorrow. So we really do appreciate Michelle giving up her time this evening when she could be, I'm sure she'd be revising very, very hard right now if she wasn't here. So thanks, Michelle, for giving up your time. On your tables, you ought to be able to find one of these white sheets. And this has a few verses from the Bible on it, and also a kind of a condensed outline of the talk that we'll be looking at this evening on this whole topic of I could never believe because of other religions. One of the top-selling books in recent years has been this book called The Life of Pi. Just to give me some idea, has anyone here actually read this other than me? A kind of fair scattering, I guess, for those of you that have read this as a reminder, and maybe some of you that haven't too. This is all about a teenager who's growing up in India. And this chap practices the religions of Islam, Christianity and Hinduism, but he does so all at the same time. Unbeknown to anyone else then, he's going to prayers at the local mosque, the local church, to talk to the priest there, and also to worship at the Hindu temple as well. One day, however, as he's walking down the seafront with his mum and dad, he runs into the imam, Father Martin, and the Hindu priest as he's doing that. And of course, a full-on argument erupts as each of them discovers that he's not been wholeheartedly committed to their one religion, but has actually, shock horror, been practicing all three. And their blood begins to boil, as you would expect. And of course, it ends up with these religious leaders at loggerheads with each other, slugging it out as to which religion is the best. In the end, all the attention turns and focuses on the character of Pi, who blurts out, in the words of Mahatma Gandhi, all religions are true, I just want to love God. And then there's what most of us would have done, which is run off very fast. And of course, his words, "all religions are true, I just want to love God," has become the dominant religious mantra of our time. So much so that to question them is almost universally regarded as being intolerant, arrogant, and bigoted. It doesn't matter which religion you choose, we are told, they're all pretty much the same thing anyway. Just find one that works for you and go for it. In an environment like that, the condemnations of other religions by the Old Testament prophets, for instance, or even the exclusive claims of Jesus Christ to be the only way to God, are not good PR for Christianity right now. I guess even the most accomplished advertising moguls couldn't make "no one comes to the Father except through me" socially acceptable. So this is probably one of the commonest questions asked, and one of the largest roadblocks to Christian faith in our day and age. How can you be so arrogant as to believe that you are right and everybody else is wrong? How can you possibly bridge the gap between the exclusive claims of Jesus Christ and the other religions that we see in the world as we look around? So then there are two main issues that I'd like to analyse here. One is to give something of a Christian attitude to other faiths in general, and then also to try and provide something of a Christian critique of this prevalent idea that all religions are equally true. So then number one on your sheets then is a Christian attitude to other faiths in general. And this is clearly a huge issue in our culture at the moment. We've got the war on terror, the wearing of veils by Muslims, the wearing of crosses by Christians, and even amongst the diversity policies, maybe in the place that we work, and the human resources departments too, this kind of thing is a big issue. But here I think there are three principles that I think are useful for us. The first is that Christianity actually affirms the freedom of religion. Respect for each individual and freedom to hold their own religious views is crucial to the way that the Christian gospel operates in the world. We are not the Taliban. The way that Christianity spreads relies on persuasion and teaching, and not on coercion and force. Therefore, we should fight for the principle of freedom of religion and the freedom to convert from one religion to the other, both here in England and abroad. Then also, a dialogue between religions is a good thing. There's much to be gained by communication, by talking and listening and understanding and learning from one another, so that people of different religions may coexist peacefully and side by side. Just over this last weekend, I was hearing about a meeting between 12 Christians and 12 Muslims who were meeting together to try and understand each other more. They weren't saying what we all believe essentially boils down to the same thing, but rather were saying we want to listen to you carefully so that we can understand accurately what you think and what you believe. Let's talk to one another rather than talking at one another. I think that kind of a dialogue is obviously a good thing. And then also, Christians should exhibit what I like to call a humble confidence. Christians should not be proud and arrogant, but neither should they be shy and retiring and cowardly about the truth of Jesus Christ. What is needed is a humble confidence. And we can see the right attitude there on the first of the scripture verses I've put on your sheets. This attitude is given us to in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15, where Peter, writing to some Christians, says, "But in your hearts set apart Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you, to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect." See, Christians are often labelled in the media as fundamentalists and intolerant. However, it seems to me that there's no contradiction at all about being passionate about what you believe about the truth of Jesus Christ, but yet also being humble and loving towards others. Contrary to popular opinion, believing in Jesus is not a threat to international peace. till then. A Christian attitude toward the faith in a general. Number two, I'd like to look at a logical response to this view that all religions are true. And I'd like to say two things here. The first is that the idea that all religions are true is actually arrogant. You've probably heard the well-known illustration of all religions being different paths up the same mountain. However, if you think about it carefully, that illustration actually hinges on you being the person right at the top of the mountain looking at all the different paths that are coming up. It actually assumes that you somehow are the truly enlightened one who knows all the essences of all the religions, all the different paths going up the mountain, whereas the people who are actually practicing them themselves, well, they're stuck on their own little road. They can't really see the whole hill. They can't really see the other paths. They don't have that lofty bird's eye view that's available to you. You see, I think that view is actually guilty of the same kind of arrogance with which Christians are commonly charged, of believing that their own religious worldview is true and that all the others are false. However, I think this is also not only arrogant, I think it's also actually naive, because it doesn't take the differences between the different religions seriously enough. So even a cursory glance over the tenets of the main world faiths reveals that their beliefs don't easily water down to the same thing, or the lowest common denominator. In actual fact, many of the things that they say are actually mutually exclusive, so they can't possibly be all equally true in any logical sense. So let's look at something as basic and as foundational as what they believe about the nature of God. So, for instance, in Christianity, there is one God who exists in three persons with relationship at the heart of who he is. In Islam, there is one God who is for the most part remote and distant. In Hinduism, there are approximately 33,000 gods, but there are also some main ones, for instance, Krishna, Shiva, and Vishnu. In Buddhism, by contrast, there is really no God. It is actually atheistic. So the view that all the religions of the world are basically saying the same thing is, I believe, simply naive. A religion that says that there is one God cannot possibly be true at the same time as a religion that says that there is no God. Either one is right or the other is right, but they are not both right. One contemporary writer has humorously said, "We believe that all religions are basically the same, at least the one that we read was. They all believe in love and goodness. They only differ on matters of revelation, creation, sin, heaven, hell, God, and salvation." And that really does just about sum the whole thing up. The idea that all religions are true actually flies in the face of logic. I think, however, underlying that idea is this assumption that what all religions are about is some kind of moral code about how you live your life, that they all boil down to pretty much something about love. And that is a really great idea. The only problem is that that doesn't take seriously what any of them are actually saying. So that's the response to the view that all religions are true. Thirdly and finally, I'd like to look at this other point, which is the uniqueness of Jesus. When we come to the Bible, we discover there that Jesus doesn't seem to view himself as one religious option among many, but rather as the only way to God. This is what he claimed in John chapter 14 and verse 6 there on your sheets. Jesus answered, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." You see, Christianity is not true because Christians are morally superior to the adherents of other religions, nor because it makes them feel good, but only because it's founder is claiming to be somebody absolutely unique. So who then is he? Who then is Jesus? Well, Jesus is God. This is actually what he claimed about himself. And we can see that from the way that he appropriated the I Am name from God from the Old Testament. So this is John chapter 8, verses 58 and 59, also there on your sheets. I tell you the truth, Jesus answered, before Abraham was born, I am. At this, they picked up stones to stone him, but Jesus hid himself, slipping away from the temple grounds. What that shows us there, that he was claiming to be God, that's clearly what his enemies understood Jesus to mean there, because they immediately picked up stones to stone him, and we know from their later writings that it's what his disciples believed as well. And this sets Jesus apart from Buddha, who never ever claimed to be God, and Muhammad, who only ever claimed to be a prophet, and actually every other human being who has ever lived. This is a quote from the Oxford academic C.S. Lewis, where he is talking about Jesus' claim to be the Son of God. There is no halfway house, and there is no parallel in other religions. If you had gone to Buddha and asked him, "Are you the son of Brahma?" he would have said, "My son, you are still in the veil of illusion." If you had gone to Socrates and asked, "Are you Zeus?" he would have laughed at you. If you'd have gone to Muhammad and asked, "Are you Allah?" he would have first rent his clothes and then cut your head off. If you had asked Confucius, "Are you heaven?" I think he would have probably replied, remarks which are not in accordance with nature are in poor taste. The idea of a great moral teacher saying what Christ said is out of the question. In my opinion, the only person who can say that sort of thing is either God or a complete lunatic suffering from that form of delusion which undermines the whole mind of man. We may note in passing that he was never regarded as a mere moral teacher. He did not produce that effect on any of the people who actually met him. He produced mainly three effects: hatred, terror, adoration. There was never any trace of anyone expressing mild approval. What a challenging quote. Jesus is not a man claiming to take us to God, but rather he is God claiming to take us to God. He is God himself come to reveal God the Father to us and bring us into relationship with him. Jesus is not only God, he's also rescuer. People often assume that Jesus came to earth to show us how to be good, or maybe give us somehow some kind of good moral example about how to live our lives. But that's not actually what he said about why he came to earth. Look with me at the next verse there, Luke chapter 19 and verse 10. This is what Jesus said about his own mission. For the Son of Man came to seek and save what was lost. And again in Mark chapter 10 and verse 45, Jesus says, "For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many." You see, this again is one huge difference between Christianity and other religions. Every other religion says you have to climb your way up to God through these beliefs and prayers and actions. Each one is like a different ladder reaching for the divine. However, Christianity is not just another ladder to add to the collection. In the gospel, God says, "You can never ever work your way up to me." Instead, Jesus, he is the ladder. In Jesus, God has reached down to rescue us and forgive us and fit us for his presence and give us access to him. He has done for us what we could never do for ourselves, which is give us communion with him. Rather shockingly, the Bible even says that all our good works are like a pile of stinking rags. See, this is why we all need a Jesus, because we all need a rescuer, and no other religion is offering that. Acts chapter 4 verse 12 says, "Salvation is found in no one else, for there's no other name under heaven given to men by which we must be saved or rescued." Jesus the rescuer. Jesus, finally, is also alive. Right at the heart of Christian belief is this fact that Jesus rose from the dead and is still alive today. Several years ago, there was a BBC radio program called Zeal of the Convert. This is a really good program, because what it used to have was these panel discussions between folk who had converted from one religion to another. And in a really interesting discussion one day between a Christian and a Buddhist leader, the Buddhist said, "I wonder if I have a relationship with the Buddha in the same way that you seem to know Jesus Christ. And he was absolutely right. The fact is that the Buddha died in 480 BC, and therefore it's impossible to have a personal relationship with him. Whereas the testimony of Christians is quite different. The Apostle Paul in the New Testament says that it's his ambition, it's his dream in life to know Christ. And then the rest of the New Testament talks about knowing Jesus as our friend, our brother, our guide, our teacher, and our mentor. It's filled with the language of household and family and personal relationship. Therefore, it's not even strictly true to call Christianity a religion, but rather a relationship. Christianity is being called into a relationship with the true and living God through Jesus Christ. The truth really is that Jesus simply leaves us nowhere else to go. He is God, he is rescuer, he is alive. He's absolutely exceptional and completely unique. He cannot be reduced to the level of one religious leader among many. To say that is to fly directly in the face of who he was, what he claimed, what he taught, and what his followers believed. It is the one option which he really just doesn't leave open to us. He's the only one who has ever had the nerve and the audacity to say, "I am truth." And that's why all religions are not equally true. Now, I understand that for many of us, we may find that hard to swallow. And for some of us, this is a giant, giant stumbling block for us. But yet, that is what Jesus said. That's what he claimed, astonishing though it is. In our culture, there really is nothing more outrageous and more subversive and more controversial than that. That truth is not plural, but rather it is a person. Believing that could get you into a lot of trouble. So then, in conclusion, how can we bridge this gap between Christianity and other religions? Not by saying that the Christian religion is superior to the others, or by saying that Christians are somehow more morally upright than anyone else. In actual fact, following the Christian religion won't get you anywhere, any more than following any other religion will. The answer to our spiritual yearnings and our need for rescue is not actually in religion at all, but rather in a relationship. If Christians were claiming that their religion was true, or if I was somehow claiming that Christianity was true, then that would be one thing. But if Jesus Christ was claiming to be truth itself, then surely that's a very different thing. Surely that's something that ought to warrant further investigation on our part. And surely that's something that we should be very, very careful before dismissing too quickly. You see, it's not all religions are true, I just want to love God. Rather, it is I just want to love God, and Jesus said, "I am the way."
Thank you very much, John. We want to give you the chance to come back with questions and clarifications and so on. But rather than just having a free-for-all now and a forest of hands, we thought the most civilised way of doing it and an anonymous way of doing it is there are some grey slips on your tables. If you have a question, if you can please jot it down on one of those slips. We will collect them together as you eat dessert and drink coffee and tea. Just a couple of points on this. Firstly, if you can make sure that the questions in some way relate to the topic of the evening rather than the sort of the Labour succession for leadership or something, or the football, so vaguely on the topic of this evening or Christianity in general. And then secondly, if you can try and write legibly, I know in this sort of computer age people are not used to doing things without the keyboard, but just try and keep them big letters and vaguely legible will make John's job easier. So we'll come and collect those as you eat dessert and drink coffee. Thank you very much.